Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No! It's the Flight Free Podcast. One presenter. One special guest. One mission to save planet Earth. Will they succeed? Find out in this thrilling episode of the Flight Free Podcast.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Flight Free Podcast, and thank you to Lou for our amazing Hollywood style opening. Now this month we don't just have one special guest, we have two special guests. I'm delighted to introduce Innes Fitzgerald, who is a young GB athlete who recently made headlines because she refused to fly to Australia for a running race. And we also have Damien Hall, who is also part of the running community, and he has written a book called We Can't Run Away From This, which is about athletes, running athletes, and their response to the climate crisis. So thank you so much for joining us, both of you. And hello, hello, Innes. Hello, Damien.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, let's just start with an introduction. So Damien, would you like to go first and tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
I suppose I'm a 47-year-old father of two, I guess a semi-professional trail ultra marathon runner, an author, and midlife crisis ultra runner is probably the quickest summary.
Well done. And we will talk about your book later, Damien, but do you want to just tell us what it is right now, what it's called?
Yeah, it came out fairly recently. It's called We Can't Run Away From This, and it is all about the running industry, runners, and climate breakdown, and how much impact we have on that, and yeah, what could be improved.
Okay, well, looking forward to hearing more about that, because it sounds really inspiring. And Innes, over to you. So would you like to please introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, I'm Innes Fitzgerald, and I'm 16, an A-level student, and a GB athlete, and I've currently got the UK 3,000 metre record. And recently turned down the flight to Australia to compete in the World Cross Country Championships, which was a tough decision, but it was the right thing to do, I think.
Yeah, well done. It must be quite a difficult stance to take so early in your career. And yes, we'll be talking a lot about that in this podcast. And actually, why don't we start with that? Because Innes, first of all, how long have you been a GB athlete? How long have you been on the scene?
The European cross country in December was my first GB best. So that was the first time running for Great Britain, but I'd done some international events with schools, and I ran in Ireland and Scotland, but wasn't such a big event as the Euros.
So you decided not to travel to Australia?
Yeah, so I wrote a letter to British Athletics and said that I didn't want to go because of the flight and the environmental consequences of that.
So there's been a lot of media attention on that. How have you responded to that? Has it been quite surprising that everybody is so interested in your story?
I think originally I was quite shocked. I was like, wow, like how I kind of thought I want to share it because I want some attention and I want people to talk. But then I was a bit, overwhelmed by the fact that there were so many people that were actually sharing it and were supportive.
Yeah. That's a really brave thing to do, actually, especially to talk about this stuff, because that's the important thing. Maybe we can come back to this aspect of it later. But one of the things we try to do here at Flight Free UK is encourage people to take action, take climate action, reduce their emissions in their personal lives. But the biggest impact comes when you talk about it. So, yeah, well done for speaking out, and congratulations for making the decision in the first place. So can we delve a little more into that as to why you made that decision in the first place?
Yeah, so it was obviously like a really tough decision. I wanted to go, of course, but I knew I was going to have to do something because, yeah, I couldn't really justify going. So I was like, it took me quite a while to work out how I was going to go about it. But yeah, living in the countryside and being with nature and all the environmental impacts of flying and how it's so damaging on the environment just didn't make it seem justifiable to go. So yeah, I just wrote the letter to British Athletics and that was kind of it.
Okay, and have you always felt like this? So have you always seen yourself as having a responsibility to reduce your emissions as far as possible?
Yeah, I guess with my parents as an influence, because they're quite on it as well. I've been brought up in that way. So I've always been quite aware of the environmental impacts. And I think that's something that lots of young people are a bit more nowadays, like they're aware of what's going on a bit more. And yeah, under their influence and being educated from them, I've learned a lot about the environmental impacts, and that kind of led me to the always be quite environmentally aware and then not really want to fly at the moment.
And what was British Athletics' reaction, if any? Did you get a response from them?
I did get a reply. It was very short. I kind of just skim read it. I was like, okay, whatever. I can't really recite what it said, but it was kind of like, okay, thank you. And then that was kind of it. It was just like, they had no, it was no opinion or anything. So,
okay. Well, if more people speak about this, then perhaps the responses would get a bit more profound, but never mind. So Damien, I want to bring you in here because you have said that you're really inspired by Innes. Can you explain why?
Just before I answer that, can I just pop back a little bit, because I have a friend who did similar. So we have a sort of GB trail running team, and he decided not to fly recently. And the response he got from the selectors was not sympathetic or encouraging, and was actually surprisingly unsupportive, I thought. It was really disappointing. But yeah, I suppose with Innes, when your decision was seen on social media, yeah, there were several of us sharing the story and saying, how cool is this? I think especially because you're so young, and there's, for me to, and my friend I mentioned, you know, we've been around for a while, and we've got less to lose by sort of opting out of a few things. Whereas for you, it just seems such a brave decision. And I think that's reflected in the response it got in the mainstream media. I just thought it was really courageous and really inspiring to a lot of us.
You have said that you are trying to cut down on the amount of flying you're doing for your races. So what is your policy when it comes to flying to races?
Yeah, so by reading around various experts and stuff, I've come up with almost a checklist of thinking about what I'll do. So yeah, I used to fly probably 3 times a year to international races. And in 2019, actually, I flew 5 times. And it was towards the end of that year that I started to think more seriously about my footprint and my effects on the planet. And I haven't flown since that. So what I do now is I think, how important is that sort of event or challenge that I might consider going to? How important is it really? So I wrote a bit of a list and I sort of scratched some of the things off. For example, there's a really cool race I'd love to do. It's the other side of India. And there's no way of getting there without, well, or realistically getting there without sort of 2 flights. So I decided I'm never going to do that one. So I narrowed my list down to, I suppose, 2 or 3 things globally that I really want to do. And then the next question is, what's the best way you can get there, or what's the lowest carbon travel that you can do? And what I found is for things like Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc, which is our biggest event really here, it's only in France. I used to just fly from Bristol, you know, £40 on EasyJet. And now I can get the train. I appreciate it does cost a little bit more and not everyone can do that. But I've got the train there twice. That was easy, really. It wasn't too much of a hardship. And obviously that's reducing your impact significantly. So the second question is, can you get there better? And the third one, okay, if you really feel you have to go there, can you stay there longer and make more of the trip? Can you turn it into part of a work trip? Can you turn it into part of a family holiday just to make those carbon emissions count for more, I suppose? So they're my 3 things. How important is it? How can I travel there? Can I make more of the trip? And that's my checklist that sort of I go through now. So yeah, I scratched a load of bucket list races off, but there are 2 or 3 left that I think I can justify to myself ethically that, all right, there's only, you know, I've only got so many more years at doing this. There are 2 or 3 big things left, but I still will travel with a great deal of unease, and I will offset it. But that's a whole separate debate that you probably deal with a lot on here. But yeah, that's how I think of things nowadays, I suppose.
Yeah, well, that's a really worthwhile and very admirable thing to have done. I think one of the things that we all need to do is think more carefully about the travels that we're doing and not just book the flight because, you know, you want to go somewhere. But actually, if we all applied that checklist thinking to our travels, then we would be getting a long way to reducing emissions and reducing unnecessary emissions, because it seems to have got to the stage where travel is just not really considered. We just do it. I wonder, actually, from your point of view, Damien, and I'll ask you in a second as well, Innes, do you think, I mean, in every aspect, there's a culture of flying. Is that particularly prevalent in athletics? Is it about the same as other areas, do you think? Or is there a pressure to fly for athletes?
Well, in my sort of area of athletics, which is very much kind of a niche within a niche, it's, I guess we call it sort of trail ultra marathon running. Most of the glamorous races are abroad in sort of mountains, I suppose. So often in the Alps or the Dolomites or America. So I guess Europe or America has most of our big exciting races. Obviously, social media is a big factor, isn't it? You see these wonderful pictures of people running in, you know, amazing mountains, and it kind of feels like everyone's traveling everywhere to run in the mountains. And I think a lot of us could do better with that on, you know, what we do on social media. And that is enticing. But what I found over the last few years, in a way, lockdown came at the right time in that we couldn't travel. And some of us got out in Britain and did, in my sort of area of the sport anyway, you can do these kind of one-off challenges, these record attempts that don't need to be an event that's organised. We got things like the Bob Graham round or the Pennine Way record. So there's quite some versatility there. And I've certainly, yeah, travelled a lot less. I feel like most of my running friends are travelling less. And when they do, they're thinking about trains or getting together with other friends and three or four people in a van or a car, which is an improvement. I feel like in my area of the sport, there's a cultural shift. I feel like it.
Great. And Innes, what about you? Do you feel, I know you're at the beginning of your career, but do you feel like the culture is there, that we fly everywhere and you're expected to take part in these events that require a flight?
Yeah, I think with athletics being so global and all these people coming together, I think if you're a top athlete, you are expected to fly. And I think, I mean, that is with every sport, but yeah, with athletics, I think it's quite, because it's like, yeah, one-to-one racing, really. And I guess that also comes with things like training and altitude training and things like that. There's so much of that on social media, you see. And there is the thing, well, can you increase your red blood cell count? But it's all a bit like endurance athletes are kind of expected to, that's just what you do. You go off into altitude and that's how you get better. But that's one view, and I'm sure there is definitely a lot of science behind it, but I don't think that's the only way. And yeah, it's not that I wouldn't go at all, but you have to question whether it's actually beneficial. I think it depends on the person and how their body is and whether actually going to altitude affects them or not. So I guess that pressure is there. In terms of racing, I think there's a pressure to fly, even if it's just indirectly.
Do you think that there are enough places in the UK for your racing that actually we don't need to do all this world stuff? We could focus much more on the local and maybe keep those international events for maybe more infrequently?
So I think there is a lot of locations in the UK for like cross-country events, and I run on the track in the summer. So I mean, all tracks are the same. It doesn't really matter where you are. It's just a 400 meter track. So I think, yeah, in terms of just like competing within a country, there's no need to go abroad. It becomes more difficult if you're like the top athlete in the country and actually you want to compete against people who maybe are at your level, and the only people who are at your level are actually abroad. Then I think it becomes more challenging.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. We'll get to the big question in the end, which is going to be about how we can reconcile our desire to compete on that world stage that you're talking about there, Innes, with the need to protect the planet. But one of the things is, of course, we can still compete with athletes from other countries, especially here in Europe. You know, things are very well connected, and there is an option simply of not flying and travelling in other ways. So you did that, Innes, earlier in this season, didn't you? You took the train to one of your races. So can you tell us where that was and what the event was and what it was like taking the train there?
Yeah, so the beginning of December, it was the European Cross Country Championships, and they were in Turin in Italy. So obviously the rest of the team were flying, but I didn't want to fly. So I took the decision to go on the train, and my dad was willing to come with me, which was good. I don't think I would have managed it by myself. And it was, I think I'd lost some of the energy I would have had if I'd left more time for the travel and been a bit more organised, I think, in general. I don't think that we were unprepared going into it, but we didn't really know what the outcomes were going to be, and we'd never done it before. So it was kind of like, oh, we'll just book the train, that train, and we'll just get the next train. It doesn't really matter if it's overnight. Like, we weren't really bothered, and it kind of like looking back on it now, we should have been more critical about the way we were doing it and being like, no, we can't, we need to have breaks in between the travel and stay the night. And I think it came down a bit to like the financial side of things as well. We're not like in any way well off, so I think I was like, no, we can't be spending loads of money on this, like we just need to do it in kind of the cheapest way possible, we just need to get there. And I think traveling overnight with so many hours on the train, it kind of took quite a lot of energy out of me, and I felt that when I was racing, I didn't quite have what I would have had if I'd done it in the UK, or I don't know, I've never flown, so I don't know whether I might not have had that energy either going on the plane. But
yeah, that sounds really tough, because of course you want to talk positively about these things, these amazing things you're doing for the planet, but then when it affects your performance and it affects the job you're doing, that does make things difficult. Do you think that it would be easier if you were to do it again? Because now you've done it, you might have a better idea of how to preserve your energy and make sure your performance is as good as it can be.
Yeah, I think it's almost like that first time when you first go to a race, you don't really know how to prepare yourself. And I think that's kind of what it felt like. I didn't really know how to like prepare myself to go on to do all the travel. So I think I'm only going to learn from doing it more times. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And Damien, because you have travelled to Mont Blanc, as you said, do you have any tips for Innes, or what's your experience been like?
Yeah, that, I mean, that's really interesting. And that cuts right to the heart of what it's like for athletes, in that taking these ethical stances may compromise our performances. And that makes it even more impressive that Innes would do that. I think I must have done three races, but they're all a little bit closer, although one was in Italy. Yeah, on trains, or it was easier, actually. There were four of us in a sort of camper van for one, which was a bit easier. I must admit, I didn't need to do any driving, so that was quite comfy. But that's probably not always going to be an option. Yeah, it is hard. I suppose you will have learned some lessons from that, and next time we'll space things out a bit more. And it was fascinating to hear you'd never actually flown. I mean, flying sounds relaxing, but often it isn't necessarily, actually. It's very cramped. There's a lot of sort of waiting around in airports. You know, I often get dehydrated flying because they take your water away, don't they? And you forget to get some more. So yeah, flying isn't, it might be sometimes more relaxing, but not necessarily. And sometimes people think, oh, the flight's only 2 hours. But actually, you're forgetting you've got to get to the airport 2 or 3 hours before that. You might have to use some transport to get to the airport. It's not always that much smoother. But yeah, I imagine you've learned some lessons from that, and hopefully next time is easier for you. I would say, I don't know what sponsorship is like in your end of the sport, but when I started, I suppose, speaking out about stuff, I thought it would put sponsors off, but actually I've had more approaches from brands because they want to be aligned with people on the right side of history, ultimately. But then you've got to look out for which ones are really, you know, well, a sports washing or not, you know, how serious are they? I expect with you, if you carry on with this stance, that you will get help from brands, because brands will want to be aligned with you, actually. And yeah, you'll have to suss out who are the right ones, but then hopefully you'll get some help that way with things like transport. But yeah, I think it's just probably spreading the trip out a bit and allowing for delays and so on. Taking some of your own snacks as well, actually, sometimes, because yeah, like healthier snacks rather than having to rely on whatever's available on the sort of trolley on the train, that sort of thing. But usually it's allowing a bit more time. And I must admit, the first time I did it, yeah, my race was terrible the first time I did it, even though I don't think that was the factor, though. I'd actually allowed myself another day to rest, like got there an extra day early. I don't think that was the factor. But yeah, time to rest, time to recover has been the big one for me, I think, getting there a day or two earlier than I would have.
Just to chip in there, just about flying and things, I was chatting to some other athletes who are, yeah, my age, and we went to Belgium for a cross-country race a couple of weeks ago, and the whole team went on the Eurostar, and it was really quite interesting because they were all like, oh, we're through security already, like, and they were like, oh, we're on the train now, and they were like, oh, obviously I've never been to an airport, so I don't really know what it's like, but they were like, oh yeah, you're just waiting around for hours and it just takes ages. They were like, this is so much easier, which was like really quite encouraging, and it made me think, like, sometimes we don't have a choice because it's what the team managers decide, but I think some athletes would like to take the more environmental option if it's there. Yeah, that was really quite interesting.
Yeah, it is good, as you say, for them to experience the positives of travelling without flying. Oh, well done for taking the Eurostar. Back to your trip to Turin, though, what did the rest of the team think about you not flying when they all had?
most people are positive, but I mean, they're not going to be straight up negative to my face. So. But yeah, I had lots of people being like, I respect that decision. My friends in the team were like, yeah, fair enough. I don't think they were necessarily inspired to do it themselves, because obviously they're so used to flying and that's just it. And I felt like the team managers didn't really have an opinion, really. They were just like, okay, that's what you're doing and that's just that, and we're going on the plane and that's just that.
So do you think that, well, obviously lots of things can and should change. Do you think there are specific things that the industry could do to encourage those low carbon travel options? So, for example, if it were easier, obviously, if it were cheaper, that would be a big, big game changer as well. But there's lots of factors involved there. But simply you not knowing, for example, about connections and things, or if there were help or packages available for, you know, specifically geared towards athletes that would help you to travel over land or travel without flying, that's the kind of thing that's needed, isn't it?
Yeah, I think incentivizing not flying, which is not what the government's doing. The government wants to incentivize flying, so it's kind of against what the whole system's set up to do. But yeah, incentivize not flying. And actually, I read something by Sir David King quite recently, and he was saying how he doesn't actually think that athletes should not have to fly. He thinks that athletes should be given a carbon budget which they can use within their career. And I thought that was quite interesting, and I liked the idea of a carbon budget and the way that we shouldn't kind of take flying for granted, but we shouldn't cancel out completely, like one flight a year to one specific event where everyone goes is a lot better than flying, I don't know, 20 times a year or however many.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And Damien, now feels like the right time to bring your book in. So your book, We Can't Run Away From This, do you explore some of the solutions or the kind of things that could happen in the industry to make it a bit greener?
Yes, I suppose I started off from the individual perspective of your average runner, you know, what would be the big elements in their footprint. And as you two would probably guess, it is the travel, and that probably is the biggest thing. Then I suppose what I was a bit unaware of was, yeah, just our sportswear and the epic emissions and pollution in creating that usually. And then obviously a lot of waste afterwards, especially our shoes that we're just throwing out all the time. And thirdly, it was probably our diets. For a non-athlete, a diet would normally be a quarter of the footprint. For an athlete, it's a bit more complicated, isn't it? Like how much of your diet actually contributed to your running and your recovery in that day, but probably a fair amount of it, to be honest. So those were the three areas for an athlete, and travel, depending on what races someone's doing, but travel could easily be and would often be the biggest slice. And then I suppose you start looking at the brands, the sportswear brands, and there was lots of greenwashing ultimately, and yeah, all sorts of fictitious claims. But then the other area was the events themselves. I suppose the classic being the big city marathons like the London Marathon, the Paris Marathon, and only some of them have had analysis of their footprints. But actually, it's quite fascinating because, say, most of the big ones, over 90% of their footprint, if you include scope 3, comes from participant travel. And obviously, it's highly inflated if people are flying there. So the Paris Marathon, actually, well, me and London fell out. They didn't want to give me their latest figures, but which they may have published by now, I'm not sure. But they wouldn't give them to me in time for the book to be published. But the Paris Marathon does have the figures available, and it was the equivalent emissions each time the Paris Marathon happens. It's the equivalent emissions of over 30 people being born and their entire life. So the emissions of over 30 people happen in you know, each year from an event, which is quite stunning, actually. Almost all of that comes from the travel, and almost all of that within the travel would be flights, you know, how many international people. So that's a big issue that the running industry has to tackle, and is slow. Is being slow to do. And I would say, looking at other sports, I mean, I'm a big football fan. Yeah, it's only just being talked about. There's some high profile cases in the Premier League of teams flying around England, you know, that's, you know, just an hour away or less than an hour. But actually, it's usually the crowds, the fan travel could be far worse. You know, it's, I don't know, say a London team is playing in Eastern Europe. If 1,000 fans fly, that, you know, that's quite significant. So those were the big areas, really. That needed addressing. And yeah, I'd say sport on the whole is way behind the curve. Not the only industry there, but yeah, there's a lot to tackle, and there's some reluctance to ask the big questions, definitely.
Yeah, okay. Well, in the last couple of minutes, can we very briefly answer those big questions? And Innes, you sort of hinted at it already, thinking or suggesting that people would save their portion of the carbon budget to have that one flight to that one event rather than do 20 flights throughout the course of a year. Damien, you obviously have your very inspiring list and criteria of what you're judging things by and if they're going to be worth it, in inverted commas. But do you think that's what's going to have to happen? Just because, Innes, for you, I'm sure people have said this as well, and I saw some of these comments on Twitter. For a runner of the standard of yourself, it is the Olympics is something that you must have somewhere in your head. And that is a massive international event. And unless it's in London, which, sorry, girl, you missed it, you're going to have to fly to get there. So what's your take on that? And then we'll come to Damien.
Yeah, no, I think it's really hard at the moment. I'm like in two minds, and I have been for quite a while, and it's quite stressful. But obviously the Olympics is like the biggest dream, and just to go is just an amazing opportunity. And I'd love to do that. But I think at the moment I can't say like how I'd behave and how I would think it could take place. But it's obviously a struggle, and the carbon emissions that come from holding such huge events is just astronomical, really. But yeah, so I can't say really how I'd go about it, but obviously that is my biggest dream, and to go would be amazing.
Well, all the best to you, and hope that that does become part of your future, the Olympic dream. And do you know what? If the chance to compete in the Olympics comes up and you have to take a flight, I'm sure the world will forgive you for doing so. I think that could be your one flight of your life. So yeah. And finally, Damien, so do you have any further thoughts on that question, the big question?
Oh, I just really feel for Innes, because my sport is maybe more like I can pick and choose a bit more. Like, we don't really have an Olympics, you know, and yeah, a lot of it's in Europe that's more accessible. And yeah, I just really feel for Innes. And yeah, I'd, you know, if this isn't patronising, I'd really say go to the Olympics if you get the chance. But you'll be there being interviewed by lots of press, and you can, you know, you'll have that big platform and you can make your point there. And I think anyone who calls you a hypocrite for that is an idiot, basically. I think it's amazing what you're doing. And I would say, again, I'm risking being patronising, but I see a lot of athlete friends actually who are too scared to speak out because they're not perfect. And that holds us all back. You know, the fear of perfection, because no one can be perfect. You know, when we eat our breakfast, that's emissions because of the food being created. When we put our clothes on, there are emissions in their creation. So you can't move for almost some emissions being created. So yeah, the fear of perfection does hold people back. And I would just, yeah, I just hope people aren't too afraid of being perfect to sort of act and speak out.
Yeah, you're definitely right there, Damien. I think that's a common narrative, isn't it? We can't let perfection be the enemy of good, or we shouldn't not take action because we can't be perfect. We had a conversation about that in a previous podcast, which was about being a climate hypocrite. So yeah, really interesting themes to explore there. Okay, well, thank you both so much for sharing your stories with us. I hope the listeners are as impressed as we are with the actions that you're taking for the climate. And Innes, the best of luck with your future racing. And I hope that things do change, because it's not really fair for us to, you know, make sacrifices on an individual level when actually what needs to change is the system to enable us to make low carbon choices or to exhibit low carbon behaviours. So yeah, best of luck with your career. We'll be watching very closely and keep on speaking out for the climate. And Damien, thanks so much. Thanks for all that you're doing as well. It's really fascinating to hear from you, and I hope people are inspired to go out and read your book. So thank you for joining us. We will be back next month with another inspiring conversation. So until then, stay safe and stay grounded.
This podcast was brought to you by the team at Flight Free UK. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to join the Flight Free Challenge for 2023. All you need to know for your challenge is at flightfree.co.uk. The Flight Free Podcast will return!